Chris, would you take the roll, please?
Council President Cardoza? Council Member Jones?
Here.
Council Member Boobin Vonderhaar?
Here.
Council Member McPherson?
Here.
Mayor Steer?
Here. Thank you. And we will begin with an invocation from Justin Sturgeon. Thank you.
Go bow your heads with me. Lord, we're grateful for the community that we live in. We're grateful for the rain that you provide, even though we don't always like it. Lord, we know that our farmers need that. We're grateful for the sun. Lord, we're just blessed to live in a land that we live in where we have freedom to worship, freedom to live our lives. And Lord, as the council gets together today and as we as they begin to just debate on how best to lead in this community, I pray for wisdom and guidance for them as they make decisions. I pray these things in Jesus' name. Amen.
Amen. Thank you. If you'll join me in the Pledge of Allegiance.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Thank you. You may be seated. The next item up is the consent agenda.
Mayor, I'd like to make a motion that we move item 4E3 to 7B for further discussion.
Second.
Okay. Motion made and seconded to move the feasibility study, item 4E3, to item 7B under business items. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
All opposed? Motion carries. And as to the rest of the consent agenda.
I move we approve the consent agenda with the change Pat noted.
Second.
Motion is made and seconded to approve the consent agenda with that one item being moved. All in favor say aye.
Aye. Aye.
All opposed? Chris, would you do a poll on that, please?
Council President Cardoza?
Yes.
Council Member Jones?
Yes.
Council Member Boobin Vonderhaar?
Yes.
Council Member McPherson?
Yes.
Thank you. And that brings us to community reports and requests. We have a presentation from J&M Sanitation on cleanup and then actually a discussion on recycling. Chad Gordon.
Mayor, council members. For the record, Chad Gordon, J&M Sanitation Operations Manager, 566 Swan Falls Road. So there's a couple things we wanted to come and talk to you guys about tonight. First and foremost, it is that time of year again. And as I'm sure we're all aware, the grass is growing and people will be out cleaning up. So in order to help that out for the city and the community, we're going to be holding our annual cleanup event again also. I've got the flyers for it. I will hand them out to you guys real quick.
Will you be posting those on Facebook?
Yes, we will post them on Facebook and the city website. And then they will also be going out with the city water bills this next month.
Thank you.
So as always in years past, we will be doing a curbside pickup for the city limits of Kuner, you know, all the customers that we service. We will also be doing our drop site as we've done in the past. There is one change there that we're going to be doing. Instead of holding it down at the Kuna City Park, we will actually be having it at our location on Swan Falls Road. The last couple years, it was getting pretty congested down there with the baseball players and different things going on. In order to kind of circumvent any issues or, you know, having more problems with conflicts there, we decided to move it. We'll be having the Haz Waste event as well. We'll be holding that out front, and then we'll be having all the containers for trash out back. We've got a little more area out there to kind of separate things out, hopefully get a better traffic flow, keep things running smoothly throughout that day. We'll also be able to have a installed so that we're able to close it off and keep the Sunday pickers and dumpers out for a while. So, other than that, everything should be about the same. We do have a couple new groups that are helping to volunteer as far as the curbside pickup goes. So hopefully that'll be a big help in order to cover the remainder of the new subdivisions that we have in an expanded area. So we'll be doing the hazardous waste, tires, refrigerators, household paint, solvents, pesticides, car batteries, stuff like that. We'll also be taking the trash down at our site and scrap metal, and then we'll be doing the curbside pickup of any other items. It's going to be Saturday, April 29th from 9 to 3. And like as I said, it will get on our Facebook page, it will get on the city's website, and then this flyer will go out with the city billing. There will be a map included also that kind of will delineate the areas that we'll be doing the curbside pickup in. I don't think anything else has changed. We'll still be doing tires for a charge, refrigeration units for a charge, as I'm sure we will have a considerable amount of material, as we always do. So that's exciting to get it done again and really help keep the city clean. Anybody have any questions or concerns?
No, I appreciate you guys doing this every year. That's so helpful. I can't even tell you how much cleaner it keeps our city in.
Well, we enjoy doing it.
You should add the number to it, so it's like the 27th annual or whatever.
You should. I was running out of space on the page because I had the other stuff about the new drop location and trying to make sure people saw that. So we'll definitely, I think I got a couple things I could add to it before we send it out, but this is pretty close to what we're going to have and put out there for everybody. I think we may try to put up a sign down at the park just to let people know that we have switched locations so that hopefully, you know.
That's probably a good idea.
We'll get the message and make their way on down there. I'm sure they'll see the line of traffic heading down Swan Falls, so hopefully that'll be an indicator. But so, the next thing we want to talk about was our recycling services that we provide to the city. We currently do what is considered a separated system. We have an 18-gallon open-top bin. It's a voluntary program. They separate the items out by item. So aluminum and tin would be one item. Plastic containers would be another item. Mixed paper would be another. And then cardboard and newspaper are others. So what they have to do is pretty basically they'll put their newspaper in the bottom, three paper sacks on top, and they separate the items out. We have the truck that collects it. Is a non-compacting truck, and it has separated compartments on the truck. So he'll dump the aluminum into one, the plastic into another, so on and so forth. When it empties into the trucks, it keeps everything separated. There has been some inquiry by citizens wondering about the potential to go to a commingled system. Commingled system is where they pretty basically take all of their recyclable items, same recyclable items, that doesn't change, but they put it all into one container. The one container is a 95-gallon trash can. We would then be able to come by with the same automated trucks that we use for trash. It would obviously be a separate truck because we keep the recycling separate, but the same style, and be able to empty that can into the truck and take it to the recycling center. Up to this point, it's something that we've always looked at and considered. The recycling is a commodities market. The price fluctuates up and down on a constant basis. Generally speaking, on the recycling, we might average $400 to $500 check for five loads a week that we take into there. Doesn't cover the costs. The material that we collect separated is actually more usable material because it's not contaminated. So if you take your milk jug, throw it in there with some paper, it's got a little milk left in it, it contaminates the paper. So then they have to take a certain amount of product out and not have it usable if it's commingled. So in keeping sight of that, you know, we wanted to kind of gauge what is the best option, you know, what can we provide the citizens. I think we've got to a point in talking with the recycling center that the commodities market has somewhat come to a little bit more level playing field, but it'll continue to go up and down. There's no predicting what it will be. But I think we've gotten to a point where we can look at the option of providing a commingled recycling system to the citizens. There has been, like I said, a considerable amount of inquiry about it. There was most recently something posted on CUNA Must Know, somebody asking about it, and a discussion was started. The mayor had some input into that, asking if citizens would be interested in paying a small nominal fee for that service. The response, I think the last time I looked, there was right around 80 responses to it, and I would say 98% of them, 99% of them, were yes, we would pay minimum of $2 up to $5 for that service. I think there was only maybe one or two comments that were not, you know, for paying it, and one of them, the lady didn't even want trash service, period. So I think we kind of put that one aside. What we're proposing is sending out a survey to all the customers to see what their level of interest would be in this sort of program. Also, if they'd be willing to pay a nominal fee of $2 a month per can that we provided for that service. The $2 pretty basically covers the cost of the can that we would be down for providing. Obviously, with that system, we are at the mercy of the market, and when it comes to the commingled, a lot of times in the past, they've had to actually pay to dispose of the recyclable material at the recycling center, whereas we've been getting a very nominal check of $400 to $500 a month. We're willing to go ahead and work through that process to try to get this, if this is something that the citizens and the council would be willing to look at as far as that nominal fee for $2 a can. So the first thing we would like to do is potentially send out this recycling survey to the customers, try to get some feedback from them as to whether or not they would be willing to pay that, if this is a service that they would want. And it would also be a voluntary service. It would pretty basically, if they wanted to participate, they'd let us know. We'd get them the can. We'd charge them the extra $2 a month. Currently, our rates for trash cans are right around $2.21 for every extra trash can that the customer is provided with. We would have a fair share of customers that currently may have two of our trash cans return one of the trash cans and then get a recycling trash can. So they'd actually be saving themselves about 20 cents a month. Because of the volume, they're producing the same amount of volume, but they're going to be able to reduce the amount going into the trash and put that into the recycling. With that said, we want to kind of get a feel for how many people really truly would participate so we can get a number to, because I, from what I've understood other companies doing when they've gone to this, they've seen an increase of participation in regards to the recycling program. So we would like to kind of get a feel for that through this survey. Also possibly have the customers get us their information back so we can start to compile a list of customers that do want to participate so when that time comes, we could have a list to start delivering the trash cans out to people. So like I said, it would be $2 a month per trash can. They could have multiples if they wanted on the recycling side. It's just the, you know, $2 a month per can. And as I said, it would be a, you know, voluntary service. We're not going to tack it on everybody. If they want to recycle, they participate. If they don't, they don't have any extra charges. So I just kind of wanted to put that out there and let the council know about, you know, what we're kind of thinking of and see what, if they have any thoughts, concerns, or otherwise in regards to it.
I have a question, a couple questions.
Go ahead.
So are you planning on then eliminating the square, the 19-gallon or whatever you said?
Yes, correct. Okay. We would eliminate that. This would be in replacement of the 18-gallon bin. Because then we would pretty basically have to run two trucks then down the road for the recycling program, so we would just run one.
Okay.
With this system going to the larger size cans, it would be a biweekly service versus a weekly service, because obviously you're going from 18 gallons to 95 gallons. So that gives them a little more room there to participate in it and not have to be worried about sticking out every week.
Would there be the option for weekly? So I just know that, like, we put out, I'd say we have like probably three times, maybe four times as much recycling as we do trash on a weekly basis. So I have a feeling if, like, my household would probably fill up our recycle bin faster than our trash can.
Trash can. So in that instance, we would just ask that the customer get it, participate with a second can. The reason we have it set up, and this is kind of the norm, that way that everybody in the Valley is doing their recycling programs when it comes to the commingled, is to go to a biweekly service. So you have an A week and a B week. That way, you know, it gives you a chance, especially as growth comes, to spread that out and be able to, you know, service all of one area one week, all of one the next. So for the, you know, for the $2, they could get an additional trash can to cover their needs for that.
Okay. Yeah. Would there be an option to ever go, I mean, depending on demand? I'm just thinking, like, for again, just using myself as an example, I don't know that we would have space for three trash cans in our garage.
It's something that we could consider as going through this process. You know, I guess I think the majority, from my understanding, what everybody else has seen, the majority of the people would fit within that biweekly schedule, and it has worked for them. So the only issue would be, how do you separate out the handful that want a weekly service? You know, you'd have to pretty basically create a route where you jump from subdivision to subdivision, picking up one or two stops. So so you kind of lose some efficiency there.
I'm just wondering if, like, if it seems like there's significant enough participation. I mean, my hope is, I mean, I'm always saddened by how few recycle bins I see out there, but if it's commingled, my hope and my assumption is that more people will participate, and therefore we would have, like, we would see a significant decrease in the amount of trash being put out and a significant increase in the amount of recycling. So I'm just wondering, I guess, if they're, like, assuming people do participate happily and frequently, might it be a weekly service? And then second question along those lines is, how are folks going to – do you have any concerns, I guess, with people not knowing which week it is, or they just put it out every week because they're not sure, and then
– So as the process of rolling this system out to the customers, we would obviously – part of that would be education and getting them all the information. I know, like, the City of Meridian, when they rolled theirs out, they had on their city website, you know, a spot where they could go to look to see what week they were on, if they were on the A route or B route, so on and so forth. So we would really try to inform them as much as possible ahead of time and really try to get that information out to them. As back to the first question, I mean, obviously if we saw the participation rates go up to the level of there was more recycling than trash, then, you know, we would almost have to look at that switch. I don't know that we would see it get to that just from what I've heard everybody else experience in the industry. But it's something that we, you know, obviously we'd have to watch. I mean, if it was a deal where they're putting more recycling out than they are trash and everybody's doing it, then there would be the need for the weekly, you know, versus the bi-weekly. So it's something we would look at.
Okay. My last question then I'll yield is for the surveys, are you anticipating putting those in utility bills?
Yeah, so we would pay to have those put in the utility bills and then have a return, you know, obviously return address from be mailed back to, so we could start to compile, you know, an idea of who wanted it, if they were okay with it. And
would there be a way to do it on, like, I get my bill electronically, so I would never get a paper copy or anything to send back. So would there be, like, I'm just throwing it out there for consideration, like if doing a SurveyMonkey type survey, or just if there was something. I don't know if we have the capability of hosting a survey on our website, but.
Yeah, I mean, I would be open to any of those ideas. I know that it gets a little, you know, complicated to figure out what's the best way to do it, because we've tried mailers before, obviously, with the cleanup project, and a lot of people end up saying they didn't check their mail, or they just open the bill, they take the flyer, they pitch it, mm-hmm. they pay the bill. Or like you said, as in your instance, they get it online. So we would have to probably look at what are the many options or what are the best options to get the information disseminated out to the citizens so that we get the most honest, you know, results back from it so that we know how to go forward from there. Because we would definitely want everybody to know about it. Social media seems to be a pretty good way to get information out there. So.
Yeah, and that might be a good way, too, in terms of, you know, I think about the fact I have a renter, and so, like, I pay the bill, and then they just pay me for it. But so, like, I'll send them the electronic copy and say, like, hey, by the way, there's a thing about the cleanup or whatever. But that just making sure that you got feedback, I guess, from rental customers particularly, who would be, like, the ones who would be putting the trash out. So yeah, if there's maybe a joint thing where, like, sending out the paper one sounds like a fine idea, but if there would be a way that we could help facilitate having an electronic option also, and as long as we're making one of the things, like, you have to put in your address, I'm hoping we could eliminate some of the duplication and stuff like that in terms of.
And I could check too with some of the guys that used to work at Meridian and see how exactly they did it and try to find some information. But yeah, I understand that, you know, because a lot of times I don't know if the property managers get that information out to the tenants. And so, granted, ultimately it's going to be the choice of the property manager if they want to pay for that extra service. So, you know, they're kind of going to have the say in that to some extent also. So, yeah, I would definitely like to get as much information out to people and get as much response back and make sure that we're not duplicating those responses in some way, shape, or form also. We currently have a participation rate of about 1,600 customers that are participating currently. So I could see that potentially bumping up to 2,500, 3,000 somewhere there, just from what everybody else has told me they've seen.
Cool. Awesome. Well, thank you for presenting about it. I'm excited.
And questions? You are probably the only landlord that passes on those information.
I try. Well, and we're changing our utility billing stuff where now the tenants can set up to get the bills electronically, so they would get them directly, and then the homeowner would still have, anyway, so so having an electronic option would also hopefully help catch those folks and stuff. Yeah.
And I should probably point out, too, that when we started having these discussions last year a little bit, and I think Tim had thrown out there that they would need to charge a couple extra bucks for that. So you're certainly not stuck to that $2 that I put out there. If you need 2 1/4 to pay for your cans, you should charge the 2 1/4 to at least recoup your money on that, because, you know, well, obviously you don't know if you're going to make money or lose money on this thing. Probably not even going to break even, but we should at least cover that cost. So,
okay.
But I appreciate your responsiveness. I mean, it was fairly quick.
We appreciate your response to it, you know, and that got the ball rolling on getting some discussion going. It's really kind of getting a gauge for what citizens' response to it would be, and it was a positive response. So, and we have been, you know, we've got the trucks to do it. So we are positioned well to be able to transfer over to that. We will just be eliminating the two old trucks that we've been using for the recycling up to this point, and then, you know, bringing in the side loads to do so. So we are positioned well. It would just be a matter of, we kind of got to know what the number of participants is so that we can kind of dictate, you know, whether or not, where, how much we have to purchase as far as carts go, because that's a pretty sizable purchase that we've already been looking at and trying to get everything squared away with the banks to do so on that end. So.
Will they just have a different colored lid?
They will. Okay. That's what our plan is, to just have a different colored lid, similar to what Meridian did before. Dark green bodies, we're thinking probably like a red lid for the recycling ones, and then same dark green color for the trash ones, so that way we can determine. The top of the lids will most likely either have something hot stamped or some sort of sticker that's on there that gives a description of the materials that we take, and that way hopefully it clears that up a little bit. You do end up with a little more contamination per load with the commingled than you do, so there is a fair share of that material that's going to end up having to be taken out of it, but it is obviously a little more efficient way to do it, and the customers seem to participate at a greater rate because of the convenience of it.
Cool.
And I do have the survey, so I can hand that out to you guys. This is just the rough draft that we started. We're probably going to add a few things. I'm going to try to, like you said, try to figure out what's the best way to get the information out to people.
Okay. Sir?
Thank you.
Actually, before I got started, I
okay, further questions for Chad?
Mayor, Chad, I'm on board, whatever you guys want to do. I have two considerations. One with the influx or the addition of multiplexes now. How does that handle as far as when I would assume the multiplexes have large containers compared to, you know, single family homes? How does that create a problem for you, or whether or not that might be something, I don't know, if we have to look at if our enclosures will be able to accommodate if they want to go on to the right recycling program. Obviously, that needs to be thought out somewhere. The other thing is that has there been any consideration on the composting material? See, I have two cans, and I use my second can for, I mean, I fill that can up every week full of lawn clippings and brush and all that, and I don't know. I mean, obviously it decomposes in the landfill, but I don't know if that's another thing that maybe down the road, obviously one step at a time. But
back to the first question, up to this point, yes, all of the multiplex or multifamily dwellings we have large containers at. It would be something that, to be honest with you, they're a problem already, even with large containers. They have a tendency to walk out and go and throw it on the ground. We add another bin for them, and getting them to separate just recyclables into that, I think that's fraught with some problems there that we would have to really think long and hard about before we went down that road. As far as individual bins per unit, I don't know how you would do that, because, I mean, especially like we're looking at that new one, Journey's End, that's behind Walgreens, I think built out, it's supposed to be somewhere in the 28 mark as far as buildings go, fourplexes. Mm-hmm. That's a lot of trash cans just aimlessly laying around or getting walked off with, so on and so forth, because they have so much move in, move out. It's something that we can try to address. I think the first step would be to get, you know, the main bulk of our residential customers taken care of on this first and foremost, and then we could potentially what some of our options might be for that. In regards to the compost, that one, I would say we want to wait a while because Boise is trying to roll that one out, and they're getting a lot of kickback in regards to it. And I don't know 100% that they're for sure that how well that's going to work, and they have to have a lot of acreage to spread that compost out on because it takes a long period of time for it to actually get to the point where it's compostable material. We've actually had a considerable amount of their customers calling us, asking us to service them because they don't want any part of it.
Yep.
And then again, it gets into, you know, the other complaint we've seen out of a lot of them is, you know, now I've got four or five cans and four or five trucks driving down the street on a weekly basis. So it's kind of, you kind of have to look at balancing it. You know, how many options do you want? And the other thing is the organics material does play an important part in the role of the landfill that I'm not sure that they're 100% of how that's going to handle when they don't have that material mixed in with everything else to help it break down over a period of time.
Okay.
So it's something in the future that we'll keep our eye on and definitely and take a look at. But I think for right now, obviously, we want to take it step by step. And if we can get this rolled out to the customers, then you know, we're working our way there.
Do you know about any type of having a central recycling center? Those that don't want to do the cans and then want a place to bring
there it? There is currently two recycling centers. They're not obviously in CUNA. There's one in Boise over on Cole Road right across from the Costco, and there's one in Nampa right behind the Kmart. They are owned by a separate company, and they take all the recyclable materials here in the valley. In the past, we've tried when you know the town was much smaller, we tried kind of central location type deal. It's a management nightmare.
Okay.
People stuff their tires, their couches, everything else. They just look at it as a free dump versus being for recyclable materials. I think that the curbside is the best, most efficient way to do it. Generally, if people call us with questions about where's the nearest recycling center, we point them to one of those two, and then they can go in there and drop them off on a regular basis if need be.
So. Great. Well, thank you.
Mm-hmm. Further question?
Make the fifth question, and that is, would you rather maintain the 18-gallon as opposed to the 95-gallon?
I'm sure,
like,
yeah.
We've already included the 18 at no cost, I believe, so give them an option to see what the public
would want. Yeah, and I think, it does talk about it kind of at the top, the green bin recycling, going to a part. So, yeah, we can add something in there to see what their preference is. Yeah, that way it just kind of clarifies the question that we're already asking of, you know, do you want to stay with the system that we currently have or would you like to go to the commingled system?
As long as we make clear that they don't actually get to make that choice for themselves, that, like, based on survey feedback, we're going to make one choice or the other for the whole city. So, yeah, because that's the only thing I worry about is if people think they're getting them.
I think they could stay with the 18-gallon or go with the other. So, yeah, no, we can reword it and try to get a little more clarity there in regards to that and make sure that, like I said, this is just kind of a rough draft to give everybody an idea of what we're looking at. We'll get something put together and then get it presented to you before we get it sent out. And that way we get something accurate that hopefully will give us the greatest amount of feedback.
Chad, what it's become more efficient for you to have the automated cart system compared to how it used to be where the guys would have to get out. So it would be probably more efficient for you to have the tip cart for recycling than the bins where you wouldn't have to have the guys get out of the trucks and as much, I should say. I'm sure they still get out sometimes.
So with the recycling system, so currently with trash, what we do is we do use the automated system, but we still are providing an unlimited service. So pretty basically anything that they have that would fit within the 95-gallon can. So say they fit their 95-gallon can full and they have a couple extra bags, we're allowing them to place that out. The guys jump out, they reload it, they empty it again. With the recycling system, we would ask that it be all in the can just for the purposes of efficiency. We would be gaining some efficiency there, but that is also trying to help offset the fact that the materials, we're now losing some on that end because we may potentially pay upwards of $20 a ton to dispose of the material, whereas an average ton price for trash is about $16.50. And currently with the recycling system that we do, they're paying us anywhere, depending on market price, anywhere from end of material, because they separate it out by material, anywhere from $5 to like $15 a ton for the material we currently bring to them, because it is separated, it's not contaminated nearly as much. So we're kind of going the other way. So, yes, the efficiency was to help to kind of offset some of that, because then the guy would be sitting in the truck, running the arm, emptying it into the top of the truck. And so that's why we would want to try to keep it to where everything needed to be within the can. So on the recycling side of it, they couldn't set out some extra bags. It would have to be contained in the can for pickup.
I thought we went away from that in the trash. And that's why we went away from the provide your own can. You had to use the tip carts.
We went to making it so that everybody needed to have at least one trash can because of the automated system, because we weren't really set up, the arm isn't set up to empty the small 35-gallon cans. They slip out and fall in. We kept the unlimited side of it so that it still kind of left that, you know, availability for people to get rid of, you know, as much trash as they need to instead of stockpiling it in their backyard. It's been a really good, actually pretty good system for us up to this point. You know, the guys have their heavier days, obviously, where they got to spend more time climbing in and out. But up to this point, we have not changed that part of it. We just made one can included with the service so that they would at least have that one can. So if they had extras, we could reload them into that and they could empty it. So up to this point, no, we haven't made it mandatory that they have everything in the can with the lid closed.
Okay. Anything further? Chad, thank you very much.
Thank you, guys.
Tim, thank you very much also.
Thank you.
Before we move on here, I want to point out that we have some scouts in the audience tonight. If you would do me a favor and introduce yourself and your troop number. Very nice. Thank you very much. The next item is the Kuna Farmers Market. Quincy Murphy.
Hi, I'm Quincy Murphy, and I'm here representing the Kuna Farmers Market. But first, I'm going to start with some changes we want to do this year for our market. Our vendors would like to have our opening day April 29th, and we are also found out we had an opportunity to work with the school district, actually with Val, for the summer food service program, and it is to provide meals, free meals, for kids 1 to 18 on Saturdays. They have the opportunity to eat meals at one of the schools Monday through Friday, but Saturday and Sundays they haven't had that opportunity in Kuna. And so I found out that that is an option, and so we have invited them to come, and Val has graciously agreed to work with us on that, and they would, since it's kind of an unknown, we would start doing a one-hour meal from 11 to noon, and we'll see how it grows. Hopefully it grows good. These meals would be available when school is not in session, so it will only run from about the first or second week in June to about the first week in August, which runs into CUNA days, which we will not function during CUNA days. So currently we would like to run the market from April 29th and have our closing day on September 30th. The hours will stay the same, 9 to noon. And we've got some new vendors, and hopefully they all show up and it's successful for everyone. But I am requesting that we have a reduction of fees for rental of the basketball court area for the market, and pay $250 for this if you have any questions, I would be glad to try and answer them.
Thank you. Quincy, questions?
It's not in our packet. How much was the rental fee last year?
$250.
Okay. So
it's the same.
Oh, I thought you were asking for a reduction?
A reduction from what it would be
normally.
Normally.
Yeah.
Oh, okay. So
same as it was.
Same deal we had before. Got it.
Right.
Okay.
Yeah.
Perfect.
But you have a couple additional days is what all you're doing, though, right?
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah. It would be because in the past we've always opened the Saturday before Mother's Day, and some of our vendors said, well, gosh, by then they're done shopping for Mother's Day, and Mother's Day is really late in May, and they would be done gardening. We're putting in most of their gardens, and we're like, okay, let's. So we're going to see how hopefully the weather helps out. So.
And then, so then for the school children to get to eat lunch, you set up some picnic tables in the grass part there by the water tower. Is that kind of what?
Right, yeah. Val and Debbie, her assistant, and I went out and we looked, and what we're planning on doing is because they have certain requirements that they have to do with the USDA, and so they plan on setting up kind of behind the market, underneath the water tower area where the little maple tree is, and facing, anyway, towards the market, so that kids come in and apparently they check in at the, and,
oh, okay,
and then they give them their lunch, and she's planning on just kind of sack lunches, and if you have more questions, Val has kindly come to in more detail. But they would give their sack lunch, but because of the way this program works, the kids would have to sit there and eat it. They can't take it home, and it's for them and not parents. And so we will, we talked to Bobby tonight, and he said that the two picnic tables that are currently in the gazebo, we could pull out, use those, and then we could put those back in when we're done. We'll see if we need more picnic tables, or maybe they just want to sit on the grass. But they'll eat their meal there, and then hopefully go home fed.
That's an awesome addition. I'm excited about that. That's a cool deal.
Yeah. Yeah. I didn't know that was even out there until I got the email this spring. So.
Yeah, it's really cool.
Further questions? Quincy, thank you. Very much.
Thank you.
Appreciate it. Bell, thank you.
Mayor, we don't need anything as far as a motion or anything tonight? Or
we're going to do that by way of resolution.
Just bring. Okay.
Perfect.
Okay.
Thank you.
Thank you. Yes, Richard. Sure. If you want to do that now, we can do that now. I don't have any problem with the fee in.
If you're going to make a resolution, we probably need to discuss it. I think because it's becoming more of a community project, maybe the city ought to look at dispersing or dispensing of any fee whatsoever. It is a benefit to the community. Out of the use the park free of charge, given that it's becoming more community-oriented.
Okay. How does anybody else feel about that?
I guess my concern is just because it's a commercial endeavor, like what would our litmus test be? It seems like we'd be able to make, the communities would be able to make the same argument. Well, it's a benefit to the community, so we shouldn't have to pay any fees to use the park.
My argument of that is in the communities, most of the vendors are from other communities. The farmer's market is pretty much close to home. Mostly farmers from the Cuna area. So.
Okay.
Yeah, I'm not necessarily opposed to what you're saying. I'm just wanting to, I guess, flesh it out a little bit more, because like we talked about last time with the hotel thing, you know, if it's if we're doing it for one, is there an expectation we're doing it for all? And if so, like, can we kind of articulate some ground rules so that it's a clear idea, like what would qualify and what wouldn't, and that sort of thing.
That got a giggle.
Quincy, could you go to the mic? Yeah. Thank you.
Do you want to know individually or the market as a whole?
Individually.
If you don't count time, we're probably still in the hole. Gosh, Mom and I have been doing this for about 12 years. I don't know the exact amount of income that all of our vendors make. I know vaguely what some of them make, but I also don't know their costs that come into it. There's a few vendors that seem to have a somewhat steady income. Bakers tend to do fairly well. But since I'm not a baker, I don't know how much they have to pay to make their product. I know from the produce end, it never pays for my time. However, I'm a farmer, that's what you do. We have some vendors that actually almost pay to be there. Mom and one other very nice lady we have come on days when they don't even make anything. Sorry. So no, we don't do this for the money. Some of us are just kind of junkies, and these are our passions. And we don't want to go to a big market where you can charge an arm and a leg and get it for what you do. This is our home. And like I said, these are our passions. These are what we do. And so we come to offer our goods to people who either don't understand or don't have the opportunity, or for some of them, they don't want to go to the big markets either. they want to stay home, and yet they want something that's homemade, and it comes from here. Like you said, most of us are local people. We have one guy from Melba, one guy, I think, that's hopefully coming from Homedale, and one that's out by Nampa, and those are about the farthest ones away. Everybody else is your neighbors.
Well, I certainly don't want it to be a situation where you lose money, because I think it's a huge value to have you guys there. So
the market as a whole, we have a couple hundred extra dollars that I keep trying to build in, that we keep kind of in reserve for emergencies. So as a whole, when we're done paying our booth fees and our commissions, we have been fortunate enough the last few years to, when we get done doing our budget, we have a few extra $100 with, and this is in part of the budget. So even though individually we're probably not rolling in dough from doing this, as a market, we budget in the fee for the park, and I always try and make sure there's a little bit extra in case, you know, your request is that we pay more, because compared to what we would pay other places, you have been incredibly generous.
kind of frenzy is you sell produce, so does Kohl's and so, or Albertsons. And so, you know, you're in competition with the others that pay taxes. So you serve food there, which we have restaurants that are
right.
in competition. So it puts us in an awkward position sometimes when we dispense of the fees. So.
Right. And this is probably going to sound stupid, but for that reason, because I understand if you set a precedent, you know, like you said, then you'll have everybody else going, but hey, you know, you can't do it. And so to make it easier on everybody, we will gladly pay that $250. And then it's not an issue. Then nobody will say, shame on you. You let somebody else do it and you won't let us. Is that fair?
Yeah, well, and I just hope that you feel empowered to come back to us each year when you come and make this presentation to say, you know, it wasn't as well attended as we hoped, and you know, I know.
but we're working. That's part of the reason we're trying to change things is to try and make it
more
better.
Of a draw. Yeah. Well, I do want you to feel empowered, though, to the extent the fee that we've worked out doesn't seem to be working for you. You know. Like, I'm happy to engage in that discussion and figure out what seems like a fair, you know, arrangement and that sort of thing. So,
I appreciate that. Thank you.
Good. Anything further?
Thank you so much.
Quincy, thank you very much. And we kind of hope that we can help to promote for the farmers market. When we do the mayor's table, that's one thing that we do the farm to table so that we can help promote farmers market, and hopefully that's helpful in the big scheme of things to promote. And so certainly wish you luck this year, and looks like you might have rain, so stuff might grow if we get sun once in a while. All right, thank you very much. That brings us to public hearing. Public hearing and consideration to approve 16-09-AN annexation, Michael Robinson. And we didn't have anyone sign up on the sign-up sheets. Is there anyone here who wishes to testify in these matters? Okay. Trevor?
Did you get a sign-in sheet?
There is none. No sign-ups on them.
Okay, no one signed up.
No one signed up.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor, council members. For the record, Trevor Kessner, Communal Planner 2. My business address is 751 West 4th Street. The application before you tonight is an annexation request from the property owner, Michael Robinson. He wants to annex into city limits. It's approximately 1 acre. He would prefer an R2 zoning designation. The site is located at 1420 West Hubbard Road. An R2 zoning designation as they come in is appropriate because the applicant's current county zoning is a designation of an R1. And this parcel is designated as medium density residential in the comprehensive plan's future land use map. All the agencies were notified, and those who responded have been included as exhibits in your packet. The owner could not attend tonight. However, he's been apprised of all the proposed conditions and has indicated that he will comply with them. The city's public utilities are reasonably available to the subject site, approximately 50 feet away to the Timber Mist development. The city engineer recommends a connection to the water and sewer facilities when and if the current systems, the septic system and the well on site, would fail or become no longer be viable. This means that Mr. Robinson could continue to use his private well and his septic system for as long as they're functioning and safe, but ultimately connection will be required. The Planning and Zoning Commission recommended approval of the annexation, and staff would conclude the application complies with golden policies in the comprehensive plan, future land use map, Title I and Title V of Keena City Code, and we would recommend approval to the council as well. I'll stand for any questions you have.
Okay, questions for Trevor.
Mayor, had a question. Trevor, on page 2 of 31, where the red outline of the subject site, it includes the east side of the property where the house is. or is it the west side? I'm just one picture looks like it's got some of the dirt lot, and then there's another picture on a different page that has the looks like it's got the grassy area and then the house. So I'm just trying.
I apologize. I don't have the actual staff report in front of me, but I will tell you that I inherited this case from a former planner. Therefore, if we need to do some clarification,
I'll
let you look at it.
Yeah, I just. If you, is that page 2?
What happened was when this picture was brought into the staff report, this red line overlay was supposed to be, it got slid.
Okay, and
does that make sense?
Yeah, because.
So the actual parcel is where the, you know, the ultimate heating location is there.
Yeah, if you look at this later on, then it looks like it's going to be that parcel.
Yes.
Okay, that's what I thought. I just wanted to clarify.
Yeah,
no problem. It's
sometimes when we move photos around, we try to draw one.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, no, I understand.
Okay, anything further?
If we zone this R2 and there's already one home, they could build another home on the property.
Yes.
Conceivably,
yes.
Would that home be required to hook up to sewer and water, or would it have the availability of the well in the septic tank?
One of the conditions in the staff report is they could continue to use the existing systems on site until they either are no longer viable or development occurs. At the time of development would be if someone wanted to build an additional house or they wanted to split that lot, that would be development. Therefore, both dwellings would be required to hook up.
Okay, further questions for Trevor? Okay, thank you, Trevor. This is a public hearing, so we'll open up the public hearing portion of this meeting, and I have no one who has signed up. So once again, is there anyone who wishes to testify in this matter? Seeing none, if we can have a motion to close the public hearing.
I move we close the public hearing.
Second.
Motion's made and seconded to close the public hearing in the matter of 16-09-AN. Chris, would you poll the council?
Council President Cardoza?
Yes.
Council Member Jones?
Yes.
Council Member Boobin Vonderhaar?
Yes.
Council Member McPherson?
Yes.
Okay. So we are at the point of any discussion between council.
Fine to me.
Or a motion if we're ready.
All right. I move we approve 16-09-AN with the conditions of approval listed in the staff report.
Second.
Motion is made and seconded to approve 16-09-AN with the conditions of approval listed in the staff report. Is there any further discussion? All those signify by saying aye.
Aye.
All opposed? Motion carries. Thank you. The next item is a public hearing and consideration to approve resolution number R21-2017-City Hall parking lot rental fees. Richard Roats.
Good evening, Mayor, Council, for the record.
Richard Roats.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Before Council is a request to amend the resolution for the fees charged to add the City of Cuna parking lot at City Hall. The proposal is $50 per day per section or $100 per day for both sections. You've been handed an exhibit that shows those sections outlined. So if you'll place the building in the lower right-hand corner to orient, these two sections proposed are the one closest to City Hall and then the second one respectively. So I will stand for any questions.
Okay, question for Richard.
Richard, can you just kind of explain or decipher where how the fees came about as far as the dollar amounts?
How we deciphered approximately the fees is we took what the cost would be to stripe the parking lot every year and the cost of the rental for the outhouse, added those up and divided it by the number of summer weekends, and that's how we determined approximately what it would cost. And we came up with that roughly at the $50 and $100.
Thank you.
So essentially, if it's rented out all summer of those weekends, the city will just be breaking even for the cost to maintain the parking lot and provide the facility, the bathroom facility.
So is the plan, first of all, it's only, this would only be available for rental during, on weekends, so when City Hall's not open?
That was the plan, I guess. If they presented some, if they wanted some smaller section, we would have to do that on an individual basis, but yes, during the normal work week, the parking lot's probably full enough with staff parking on one side and the public parking on the other section that it wouldn't be available.
And is that in a resolution somewhere, like what the availability of it is, that it would, you know, you can only rent on the weekends, or?
It's not, because, again, they would have to come in with a special event plan.
Okay.
At that point in time, we would find out exactly what the proposal was. If they wanted to place something, for example, at this point in time, the fireworks, if they wanted just to have a small section out there and were willing to pay a certain amount, then we would be able to do that. So we didn't want to exclude that from the discussions, but generally speaking, this will apply on the weekends.
Okay, and then I'm assuming the, I'm going to call them wings, are left open for parking for whatever event is happening. Is that the idea?
Parking, the westernmost wing that abuts the Greg Nelson property, that's going to be reserved for greenbelt use, and then we're going to make an ADA parking spot down by the greenbelt, so they have that, and then the other parking will either be for the public participating in whatever event's going on, or some vendor parking, but that again is going to be based upon a case-by-case basis. If the event has vendors that are going to have bringing the merchandise in with trailers, we're probably going to have them make arrangements with somebody else where they're going to park all those trailers and stuff. For example, many of these people will be bringing in 5x8 or 8x10 type of trailers pulled by a pickup truck. That obviously will take up the parking lot pretty quickly, so they'll have to make other arrangements. But the thought is to deal with that on a case-by-case basis as part of the special event plan.
Okay, but so the idea is that if somebody rents, we'll say full parking lot, I'm using air quotes, full parking lot, based on what you've handed us this picture, that would mean that they're not going to be like conducting their event on the wings.
Correct.
Okay, yeah. Perfect.
Okay, further question.
Richard, what is the definition of facility?
Facility?
Would it include the parking lot or just the building?
Any of the, I think we've defined that in code to include any public, meaning city-owned property, including the parking lots.
It would include the parking lot. It doesn't specifically have to spell out facility and parking lot for anything. You don't think?
No, I don't think so.
Okay, for simplicity?
Yeah.
Okay, further questions?
Mayor, I had
a
few questions. Just for clarification, a fireworks stand would be considered a temporary vendor, therefore would not be able to use a city parking lot for a
under the
temporary vendor.
Yes, we're going to revisit that to see if it's better to utilize that versus the special event.
Okay. I think most of my concerns have been addressed as far as keeping the parking. I am concerned, though, that currently we do not have an ordinance that prevents any type of overnight parking in our parking lots. How are we going to facilitate, because I know sometimes every once in a while there's a few overflows from possibly an event at Cowgirls or something, that there's people parked in the parking lot, which I think they're hopefully making the right decision of not driving, drinking and driving. But if we have an event scheduled that following Saturday and the car is there overnight, are we towing their vehicle? How are we controlling or maintaining that to prevent that overnight parking from happening and interfering with a special event that has reserved that parking lot?
We did address that. The first item was to put some type of barricade between the gravel parking lot and the city parking lot so cars don't freely flow back and forth, because at this point in time, I'm not sure if they even realize that they're turning into property that's not part of Cowgirls.
Yeah.
The second was to post it. Special event, cars must be removed by 7 a.m. or whatever, and if that's not effective, then the third one would be to close the parking lot the night before the special event. Hopefully we don't have to get to that and be parked as possible. What we don't want to do, obviously, is force these people to not have a place to leave their car and drive when they're not supposed to. And if it's overflow parking from Cowgirls, I just don't know how crowded that is, or if it's more convenient for them to park there. But we'll deal with that by assessing it.
And then as far as maintaining the one side for Greenbelt access, is that something that possibly staff would want to create some signs or something like that to inform people that that's what that's for? I just, my concern is that they may not know they can still park there, and I have no problem with that if we need to provide some sort of funding to create that sign, but I would like to see something in that so that people on the weekends know that that site is for Greenbelt access and they still have access to it, because that was one of my concerns, but I wasn't aware that that wasn't going to be closed off, so that's been addressed by not closing it off. But if
the,
we can.
The thought was to have signage up front for the westernmost entrance to say Greenbelt parking, or and then the easternmost say event parking or event entrance type of thing, so people would know, and then to post that, and then as part of the special event plan, have that in there that the sponsor of that would inform the vendors that that parking is for Greenbelt access parking and not for the event parking.
My concern stems a little bit, I've seen in the past from other special events, that when you have stuff like that, sometimes a promoter will discourage people from parking there when they have every right, and that's what I just want to encourage, that doesn't
we would hope that they would discourage vendors from parking there and encourage the public to continue to park there. Okay. It's well used, and
I haven't
been here on the weekends to see it, but I do know during the week it's a well used access point to Green Belt to the park.
I don't have a problem with the fees. I'm okay with that. And you've addressed the additional ADA requirements if needed. So I guess I don't. These aren't any other questions. I'm good. Thank you.
Okay. Thank you. Okay. Anything further for Richard?
I've got one question. We have one porta potty out there in the southwest corner.
Yes.
When this is restroom going to be adequate, or are we going to put others in there?
I think we'll have to deal with that on a case-by-case basis to see what the expected attendance is and make sure it's in compliance with the provisions.
Where I guess I've got a problem is if we have to put another bathroom or two just for a few days, you may find the cost to deliver and pick up that extra restroom might be $25-$50, and we'll become a non-profit.
If we have to do that, that would be passed on directly to the special event promoter for that particular event. The city, as part of this, has agreed that you'll do this.
Have to be spelled out here then, and it has a I would read it the city whole parking lot, $50 per day. I would assume once I paid the $50, I would expect adequate to the sanitary facilities.
Chris has an answer to that, I think.
Council President Cardoza, in the special event plan ordinance that we just passed, it breaks all that out. For example, CUNA days, they have way too many people to just use the permanent bathroom structures that we have, so they have to bring in at their expense additional restroom facilities. It'll be the same thing here. We don't pay for it up front and then bill them out. It's part of their special event plan, just like they have to provide proof of insurance. They'll have to provide restrooms if the number of their attendees exceed what bathroom facilities are available.
Richard, I have a couple more questions for you. Can a non-special event rent this parking lot? Can a private citizen come down and rent the parking lot?
As long as they do the special event plan.
But if it's a private party, they would not require a special event.
Like, we don't require a special event plan for somebody to rent the gazebo. They're having a picnic or something.
I think we would want to do it. You're talking if they just wanted to rent this for a party?
Yeah, if somebody wanted to have a barbecue in the parking lot for a family reunion, like they would the gazebo or the band shell, are we going to allow them to do that with the parking lot?
Well, if they're going to have it open to the entire public, probably. I mean, that's been the criteria. If it's open to anybody and everybody, then we don't require that. But if it's going to be...
I don't think that's true, though. That's not true at all. I mean, we don't require a special event plan that I'm aware of anytime somebody rents, like, the band shell or something.
I'm talking about rental, just the rental part of it.
Right.
If they want to reserve that space, then they would do the rental part of it.
Yeah, right. I'm talking about, though, but I can come down here and pay a rental fee and reserve the parking lot and have my own little private barbecue one weekend.
Councilmember Jones, when council discussed this, the direction that they gave staff previously before we moved forward with this, was that to rent the parking lot, it required a special event plan. That was the instruction that council gave three meetings ago when it came forth for the conversation. I could try and pull the minutes specifically for that, but that was the direction that council gave staff, was that to rent the parking lot, they needed to have a special event plan, and then mobile vendors had to be addressed separately and differently.
And where would I find that information now, though, if I wasn't aware of that?
The direction.
The requirement that if there's nothing, we have no resolution or we have no ordinance stating that at this point.
Right. No, I hear what you're saying there, but that's what direction was before, so maybe we may need to put something in this resolution or bring forth something in an amendment to... Well,
but I think what his question is there something right now that says you have to have a special event plan when you rent the parking lot? Because if there's not, then I don't know why we would need to have a resolution saying you don't. You know what I mean? If there's not currently a resolution that says you must have one, why would we need to now have a resolution that says you don't need to have one?
Let me clarify, because I think I just got confused. there's no resolution that says, so if we put if this resolution says you can rent the parking lot, that's what it's with mm-hmm. a fee. And no, it doesn't say you have to have a special event plan to rent it, and we don't have anything that says that you do or don't have to have a special event plan to rent it. So previously, council had indicated if you rented the parking lot, you had to have a special event plan. So if that's still council's direction, then I would imagine we need to amend or modify something that says for renting the parking lot, you have to have a special event plan. But if council is fine with private parties occurring in it, then no, we wouldn't need to do anything. We wouldn't need to amend or put a resolution forth for that. Did I understand?
I guess I'm just confused, because what I'm hearing is the current rule is not actually written anywhere. but it's what we're enforcing. And if we don't want that rule, then we need to put something in writing saying that's not the rule, even though it's not in writing anywhere now saying it is the rule. Right? Is that, I mean, right. Does that make sense?
What I just was looking for something that lays these guidelines out as far as the rental of the parking lot, and then to add, you know, what site is for what and that type of thing.
Let me ask this question. Does council intend that this be available for rental for private parties or not? And if not, that it only be available for rentals for special events? We've published this just the fees. All we would need to do is amend this to say under the parking lot rental must also obtain special event permit from the city. And that would, if that's the direction council wants to go, then we would have that taken care of. Clearly in here then that they would know that with the payment of this fee, that means you also have to get the special event plan approved.
Nothing springs to my mind immediately of something that, like a reason somebody would rent it privately. I mean, maybe like a barbecue thing, but I mean, I guess I don't know why we would treat it differently than any other city facility. That, if we don't require a special event plan anytime anybody rents like the band shell, then it seems weird we would require it. I mean, it seems like we should be looking at what's the use. And does that require a special event plan rather than forcing a special event plan on, you know, whatever use you might have for it?
Right.
That seems to make sense to me. That way we're not, like, having people go to a bunch of effort for no reason.
Here's what where my reasoning was heading. If I'm not required to have a special event plan to rent the parking lot, what's to stop me if the parking lot has not been rented, to come down here to pay $50 during CUNA days, and now I have my own private parking lot that I can have my relatives come in and have them stay in that parking lot and have a designated parking area for them. And whether or not, I don't know if that would happen, but I mean, it's a very possibility, because to spend $50 to get 30 guaranteed parking spaces may not be a bad exchange on a very crowded, busy weekend. I just think of a lot of things like that. So, I just and if that was the case, then I think we need to have something in there that parking lots, do we allow the parking lot to be rented and then people charge for parking? Come down here and pay the $100 for my 50 spaces, and then I can charge $5 a person to come in and make $250 off the city. Just to think about. Just to think of the bigger picture. Just, but if we're going to make a special event plan, but who's to stop somebody, a nonprofit, from coming in here who would be easily able to supply the insurance? Because I think that would be your biggest hurdle for a private citizen coming here to do a special event plan, from taking over the parking lot. So whether or not that's something council wants to, I mean, I'd rather stop it now than have to deal with it later. But I just don't know if others have thought of stuff like that. And
well, I mean, in looking at that use, wouldn't it be, if we're talking about having, like, dozens of people come in, and particularly if you're charging, I would assume that would fall under a special event plan.
Yeah, it would only apply if it was the family members, and I guess they're coming down to park.
Yeah.
But what I'm saying is that something that we would allow if somebody wanted to come rent the parking lot, fill out the special event plan, and then either charge for parking for an event. You know, a lot of places I know I've seen, like if you go down to the Boise Art Festival, every other parking lot is a paid parking lot.
Yeah, I mean,
I just don't know if we want to deter that now or just cross that bridge when it comes, but I prefer to try to think about everything at the beginning than.
Yeah, I don't know if we want to draw, I don't know that I can necessarily anticipate all the different times when somebody would need to park here, but I certainly think that I would have a preference that it's a community-owned facility, and therefore we would not deprive the community of its use for a community event. So, like, my preference would be you're not allowed to rent our parking lot for parking, like to sell parking in an event in CUNA where there's a need for everybody to be able to get there and park.
And I don't have a problem with that. I just, if we're going to have to make a, I mean, I assume we need to make a resolution on rules and procedures.
I think I'd be fine, globally saying, like, you're not allowed to rent the parking lot to charge for parking.
Yeah, and I don't have a problem with that either. I just would rather get that put in there instead of coming back with amendments, if that's what we're going to do. And then to add this, and actually decipher on a map of what we're expecting as far as Greenbelt access, non-Greenbelt access, that type of thing. So, I mean, I'd just rather have something black and white.
Okay. This one deals with the fees.
Yep.
Maybe we'll do another one that deals with the event rental and access.
I don't have necessarily have a problem with that, but it just seems like we're backwards. I think that we should have our guidelines in place before we set fees. I just don't understand. It seems that we are setting a fee for something that we have no guidelines for. I don't necessarily have a problem with it, but it just
I tend to agree, because it's like, how are you supposed to know how to process an application if there's no rules for it yet? Like, we're saying here's how much it costs, but you have no idea whether a certain use is allowed or not.
So, yeah. What we're talking about is the fees for the rental of the parking lot. If it's a public event, it's going to be through the special event plan process, which will define those individually, so we will have a process. Now, council wants a general thing. I can work on that, but I don't think we're uncovered by not having it in effect right now on a resolution that says, you know, the Greenbelt access has to be preserved, and here's how you got to get down there, and here's what you can park that thing, because we're going to be dealing with that on every single special event plan that comes through, quite frankly.
But we don't have that resolution as we speak, though.
I know, but we're going to be dealing, we have discretion. Dealing with it in the special event plan process. So we know that that western side is going to be, as we've indicated, is going to be Greenbelt access. So when we go through that process, it's going to be, this has to be maintained for Greenbelt access.
I'm going to throw one more thing at you. Who's going to enforce that?
Who's going to enforce the Greenbelt, I guess?
Yeah, the Greenbelt access. Who's, I mean, at what point, how does that get enforced?
Well, I guess we'll play it on a case-by-case basis. We never know who's going to say something in communities isn't, you know, overrunning or overstepping or, you know, whatever kind of thing. I mean, we only know until when we're out there and we observe it.
And I understand that, but we're not there on the weekends. Who's observing on the weekends? You know, that's where my guess my concern is obviously I don't want to pay staff to be on call in case of something of an issue. Now, whether or not we want to incorporate that into our special event fees, but I definitely don't want this to become a, you know, where our police officers are down here. I mean, they have better things to do, but I don't want to be here all night either talking about this, but it seems to me that we're backwards again. We haven't discussed how we're going to do this, yet you're asking me to put in a fee. Now, if you want me to vote for the fee and not implement it until the guidelines are put in, I'm okay with that too. But I think that creates a problem. I believe there's a pressing issue that somehow this needs to be resolved relatively soon, and we don't have another meeting before I believe that's going to happen. So,
well, I think we're making this really complicated, though. How would you ever enforce that someone parks in a parking lot is going to go to the green belt without actually sitting there watching it happen?
Oh, I agree.
We put signage there. That's our enforcement. That's the only thing we can do. And then we have to trust people. I mean, I think we're taking this way too far. I don't know how we're ever going to enforce that, so I don't know why we're bringing this in as part of the discussion. I guess that'd be my question.
I guess I sort of get the concern in the sense of, like, depending on what the event is, like, if we know that there's trailers or something parked there, it's very clearly people who rented the parking lot and they're using the space. I think that's more of the concern rather than, like, are people who are attending the event parking in the Greenbelt parking? Because I think you're totally right. that's just going to be really hard to enforce. But, yeah, just like, is there something that we can do to make sure that the people who rent the parking lot are abiding by whatever they've agreed to in the special event?
Well, I think the resolution should just spell that out as far as a requirement from the promoter to make sure that they, not necessarily, I guess, police it, but observe it, or I guess policing is the word, but, you know, they should have some sort of responsibility to make sure that the public still has access to it.
I think council, you know, obviously recognizes an issue, but council also needs to realize that there's discretion that staff exercises in these special event plans and looking out for those interests. If you adopt a resolution, that's not going to solve the issue that you have. Is how are you going to make sure that that person in that car is attending the event versus on the greenbelt? I think if you give staff the opportunity to go through the special event, make those conditions, you've already said that, and then, you know, if we've got a problem, either or, it's going to come to the attention of somebody, and we're going to have to address it. In this particular case, because it's a multi-weekend event, we have the ability to do that. That's the only event that's so far come forward. So there is a threat of, if you don't comply with these terms and conditions, or you're letting somebody park over here, or this whole place is filled up because you haven't made arrangements for parking, the ability is to pull the special event plan permits for the rest of those things. So there is a little bit of teeth in those particular, in the special event plan, to get those things complied with.
And I understand that, but how do you, if it's not written anywhere, then how do you, and you, if you're doing it verbally, I think that we need to stay away from verbals, and if it's written somewhere that this is our requirement, and then we have them sign part of our application, then that resolves it. I don't have an issue with it. We can go from there, but verbally becomes he said, she said, and it's, I'd rather, if you're going to set the guidelines, let's just put them somewhere. That's all I'm asking.
Let me ask you this, council. CUNA event plan, things that you do in that plan are directed by the special event permit. Those things are not in a resolution spelled out specifically. So if you're talking about having a resolution to define the opportunity for the city to exercise some discretion, then we better carry it through in every single trash can in that placement in CUNA days is going to be in a resolution. I mean, that's how technically you want to get to enforce this. And I'm saying give staff the discretion. You've directed us to say, okay, the western part is for parking, okay, for the greenbelt access. Now, if there's a problem with it, we'll find out about it. But I think we're getting to the point of becoming so technical that the compliance issues are going to be taken to where are we putting trash cans, and is it in a resolution that tells you that you can put a trash can there? And we don't do that.
Well, I think that's over-exaggerating, but I understand your rationale behind it. But I don't think that's what I'm looking for. But if you're taking it that way, then I'm sorry. And I apologize for, I guess, wasting everybody's time. You know, I just – my thing is it just seems like there's a bigger picture. And, you know, I'd rather deal with it now than later so somebody else doesn't have to deal with it. We don't have to make amendments. And I'm a little discouraged that we have a public hearing on fees that we never even discussed. So, I mean, it goes back to, I thought council was the one that makes that decision, obviously on staff's input, but we've already processed it and published it. So, I mean, whatever you guys want to do.
What discussion do you want on fees as to how much they are? Do you not like the way that staff came up with the figures? What part do you want to discuss? That's what we're doing right now, is discussing this.
I guess the only issue that I have is that they're already published, and if we do decide to change them, we have to republish it. I guess that's my only concern is that, you know, I asked to talk about this 2 weeks ago. We were postponed, I would just prefer a little heads up, hey, this is what we're thinking, what do you guys want, before we go and publish this stuff. I mean, it just But it's you know, I'll just leave it. It's done. I'm done.
I think staff trying to come up with a calculation and a formula that would be fair to the sponsor of the special. special event, and the city wouldn't be losing money, and that's how we came up with that. If
I don't have a problem with that. My issue is that the way it was implemented. I have the issue of that we tend to publish things that cannot or tend to be more difficult to change because we've already published them. And I have I'm not against the rationale or what the fees are. I'm not against that. But if we wanted to change them, then we have to go through and do another public hearing. So it's kind of like, you know, not to waste people's time, but if we were not acceptable to it, then we'd have to do this all over again. All I'm saying is that if it becomes, since it's our decision as council to make that legislative decision, then we should have that opportunity before it's published to be in agreement with that decision, is, I guess, where my issue. And that's a totally different side note. But, all I'm trying to do, like I said, was trying to vet out what other different ways that an easy way to term the other ways that this can be manipulated. And if nobody's concerned about that as far as from other levels, I'm not saying council or staff, but I'm just saying if that's not a concern, then I guess I'm in a minority, and that's fine. But my views have been addressed.
At the risk of prolonging this, I will ask one more question, which is, has there been any thought about whether folks would be renting the giant grass lot?
Yes. There was a discussion earlier on would that be included in it or not. The city has some plans to make some improvements, putting up a large pergola and some other amenities and some benches there, so we're not sure how that would impact it. And it just seemed to be, if you look at that, it's almost one-third of the available, would it be a third and a third and a third? And if you tried to split it, we looked at splitting it from the street to that first row of parking and then the second section being right down the middle of that first row to the building where that line exists to the south. And then it became, well, you get the first spot, let's call it location A, which would include the grass, or location B, or A and B, type of thing, and it became just too cumbersome to think about it. And I guess at some point in time, if we wanted to make that another section or the availability, we would come back and say, we've had some requests for this, how do we want to deal with it?
I guess I'm not really clear. Are you saying we didn't do it because it would be too hard to figure out how the remaining parking spaces divvy up?
No, it was a consideration on how we would divide it into two equal spots.
Divide what?
Sections. So we had discussed having two sections.
But the available. Sections of what? I'm sorry. I'm not totally. Are you talking about the
parking lot section? The proposal was, or the discussion was, that we would have one section and then a second section.
Let's say like north, south, and then east north. Parking and west parking.
Okay.
So, yeah, go ahead. Just to make sure I'm following. Sorry.
Okay. So the north section, which we were trying to determine if we would include the grass in that north section.
Yeah, I was just thinking the grass would be its own section. So I was just wondering if we'd thought about it, and then
What we thought about was we take the line down the middle of that first section up here, and then this would be the second section. That's what we were contemplating. But then with the improvements that we're going to do on the grass, we weren't sure how that would be, and that would make them appear unequal. And so the thought was, let's just see how this goes and decide if people are interested in the grass, maybe we'll do something at a later time on it.
And make the grass its own section?
Yes.
Yeah, that was kind of what I was getting at. Okay, but we don't want to do that right now?
Correct.
Okay.
And those improvements would come before council before they're made, so just
got
to
it.
Clarify that point.
Yes.
All right.
Mayor?
Yes.
I think I understand Councilmember Jones's concerns, and if council's not comfortable with passing this evening and they want to table it, I would ask consideration that they know that there is an upcoming event that's due to start the 1st, and we don't have council meeting again until the 4th. I'd ask that if council determines they want to table this matter until they can do some additional modifications, that they would give us the authority to execute a special event plan for the event on the 1st as we continue to refine potential changes, which I think would be to the special event plan ordinance, because that's where these things would input to. If that made sense, my request.
Okay.
Mayor, I just, so council members know, I have no issue to table it. I have no problem with the fees. I just, my concern was we have guidelines that are verbally on record that I just wanted on paper, so.
Okay. Any further questions for Richard? We need to do a public hearing, so whenever you're ready.
I've got one question, Richard. If I was to have a Shakespearean festival on the Greenbelt out here, would that allow me free access to all the parking in the north and south parking lot? Or would I be compelled to rent it since I have a special use permit for the Shakespearean festival?
The discussion, council member Cardoza, the discussion we had was if you rent Section A or B, it's for that use. If you're going to have an event somewhere and not utilize those spots because it's public, you would have access to park your vehicles there.
Okay. Mayor, if I could, getting back to Mr. Jones's question, I think I agree. We have a public hearing, and then we have a consideration on a resolution that wasn't even brought to us prior to tonight. And I think that's an ordinance. Is it not that?
Pretty much, yeah. I just...
And I tend to agree with it. You're asking us to rubber stamp things that the city has done without our input to a certain degree. And I guess I have to, even though I don't agree with them much, I have to agree with them tonight that issues such as resolutions should be brought to us for discussion before it's advertised, not after it's advertised. Although you got to advertise it for a public hearing, but I'm not sure the resolution was brought before us for a consolidation before it was published. And I think that's Pat's argument.
I don't believe that anyone here is asking for a rubber stamp.
No.
And I take somewhat offense to that. If you want to talk about what the fees should be and all of this stuff before we advertise and publicize, that's fine. We can do that. But there's nobody here asking you to rubber stamp things.
Okay, rubber stamp is probably a bad word to use. What I'm agreeing to, Pat, is issues should be brought before us before it's brought to us as a resolution so that we have input to what is put into the resolution, not after it is advertised and brought before us for public discussion. And I think that's argument, and I think it's my argument.
But is there some reason that you don't feel that you can table this? I mean, there's no one asking you, there's no one telling you you have to approve this. If you don't like the way this is written, it is completely appropriate to table it, rewrite it. If we have to republish, we will. I guess I don't understand where this is coming from. I don't understand this argument. If you want us to bring you things before we publish them, we can do that. But to bring you every resolution before we make a resolution, I don't get it. I don't know what you want from us.
I think, Mayor, is where I'm coming from is that, one, we have no resolution. All we're technically here for tonight, I believe, is a public hearing on the fees.
Which is a resolution.
But, yeah, but, I mean, as far as the guidelines have all been stated in here, it is somewhat fortunate, I guess, that we do not have a large crowd at our meetings. It is somewhat unfortunate, too, but, you know, I don't think that I would have wanted to have this whole discussion why we have a public hearing during the public hearing when we could have done this before.
All I'm saying is we could have vetted all this out 2 weeks ago, but we were asked not to do it, and then all of a sudden there is a published public fee schedule of fees that we had no discussion on. I'm not against the fees. I'm not against taking staff's recommendation. I think staff's recommendation is fine. But again, it looks to me as if it's the staff making that decision and not the council making the decision. And that's where I have the issue. And in the past, that when we've talked about this, we have gotten the, well, we need to republish this again. And I know you stated that we can table this, and I appreciate that, but we've also got the statement that we have a pressing matter for the weekend. I don't want to deter that. That's not what I'm here for tonight. That is not my goal, is to address that event particularly. My goal is the overall that we vet this all out at once or at the beginning, and it creates easier, because now we're talking now another special event or amendment that was just brought up. I mean, are we really going to make another amendment to the special event ordinance? And you don't have to respond to that. But that's where I'm coming from. And I just think that that's been lost somewhere. And I have no problem voting for the fees. I think the fees are fine. That's not my concern. So.
Well, as long as we know moving forward what it is that you would like from myself and from staff so that we don't run into this issue again. What? Are you saying anything that we want to publish needs to come before council before we publish it?
Well, I would think that it should. Why are we, everything usually typically does, all of our ordinances get passed and then we publish. So I don't know where we wouldn't do that.
So on all public hearings, including land use, you want notification and an opportunity to respond before it comes to council for that actual public hearing?
Well, you're at that point, you're asking us to do a make a decision based on already published information or based on what our code says. And I don't have a problem with that. You're asking me to vote on something regarding a code that is not, as far as I'm concerned, complete or I don't want to say understandable, but there's no information there regarding this. I just felt that we should have had the opportunity to discuss this to make sure that we were okay with the fees before we published them, because if we weren't okay, we would have to spend money again to republish it and then spend money again to have another public hearing. So, and I know that I have every right to table it, decline it, whatever, but you know what? It does put a little bit of, now am I wasting money again to have another public hearing based on $20? You know, I just felt that it was I just felt that we were going to discuss this and before we did it. That's all I'm saying.
You would like a hearing before the public hearing when we're establishing fees?
No, all I'm saying is that why could we have not come in 2 weeks ago when I asked about this and said, this is what staff came up with, these are what we're recommending, and we all could have said, great, let's do it, publish it, let's have the public hearing. Okay. That's all I'm saying is vet it out where it doesn't cost us any more money if we want to change it. Now it's going to cost us money if we decide to change it. Right. And am I going to waste hundreds of dollars to change something to make a $20 difference when I only have, and I don't know what the code is as far as what the percentage is that if we have to increase it by, that we have to have another public hearing. But I just, you know, we discussed this. We were told we were going to discuss this during the special event meeting. We didn't do that. I brought it to council to last meeting, and we were told that we'd have a discussion, and then all this.
So my question then is, in the future, if it's a fee-setting public hearing, you would like a hearing on the agenda discussion before that public hearing takes place, meaning?
Well, I think it's common courtesy.
Okay. I want to make sure we don't go down this road again.
Yeah, no, I just think it's courtesy that this is what do you guys agree? And then obviously we can, based on the public hearing, but if we have staff and council's consensus on something before we publish it, really the only input that we have to decide at that point is the public's input. But now we have two options, that could have possibly done this. And I think a lot of this discussion that we had tonight could have not had to happen tonight. Could have happened before or in the special event meeting. It just, I don't know. I just, like I said, I try to look at the bigger picture and try to resolve it first. I try to be proactive instead of reactive. And that's all I was trying to do. So I apologize for taking everybody's time tonight.
All horses have been beat completely to death. Let's move on.
So there's no further discussion. I'll just move that we
approve. We have to have a public
sorry.
Okay, no further questions for Richard? Okay, I will open the public hearing portion for the approval resolution number R21-2017, parking lot rental fees. I did not have anyone sign up. Is there anyone in the audience who wishes to testify in this matter? Okay, if you would sign in on the sheet and then state your name and address for the record. Tim Gordon.
Tim Gordon, 1206 North Black Cat, Kuna Road, and Idaho. And anyways, I'd just like to thank you for your conversation. I think you're all people of good faith, and I think you're all working for our best interest. And sometimes it's messy, but I really do appreciate the job you guys do. Simply said.
Thank you.
Thank you, Tim.
Thank you. Anyone else? Seeing none, if we could have a motion to close the public hearing.
I move we close public hearing.
Second.
Motion's made and second to close the public hearing. Chris, would you poll the council?
Council President Cardoza?
Yes.
Councilmember Jones?
Yes.
Councilmember Boobin Vonderhaar?
Yes.
Councilmember McPherson?
Yes.
Okay, the public portion hearing is closed. Is there any further discussion? If not, motion.
Mayor, I move that we approve resolution R21-2017.
Second.
Motion is made and seconded to approve. Is there any further discussion? Chris, would you poll the council?
Council President Cardoza?
Yes.
Councilmember Jones?
Yes.
Councilmember Boobin Vonderhaar?
Yes.
Councilmember McPherson?
Yes.
Motion carried. Business items. Item 7A, consideration to approve resolution number R27-2017, appointing new members to the Arts Commission. Chris Engels.
Thank you, Mayor, Council. Before you is a resolution to appoint three new members to the Art Commission as recommended by the commissioners from their last meeting. As a side note, there has been discussion how many members actually will sit on that commission, and the commission will be finishing up bylaws hopefully in the next meeting or two. They've been working on those. I stand for any questions.
Questions for Chris?
Mayor, I had a question not necessarily directed at Chris per se, but do we have any requirements to be on a commission for any commission as far as being a CUNA citizen or anything regarding that nature?
Chris, do you want to address that?
Councilmember Jones, no, there's no requirement that they be a CUNA citizen. That would be in the bylaws, and our commission discussed it, and though there's a good number of locals, they did want to keep it open to others that are outside of CUNA.
Thank you.
Okay. Anything further?
Move we approve resolution number R27-2017.
Second.
Motion is made and seconded to approve resolution number R27-2017. Is there any further discussion? All those in favor signify by saying aye.
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 All opposed? Motion carries. Thank you. Item 7B is moved on the agenda from item 4E3, the feasibility study.
Mayor, I asked this to be moved to this spot because I just had a few follow-up questions. I know regarding the contract that is in here, I know there were some concerns addressed from several council members that we were looking to be a little more of a broad discussion or, I guess, a broad study done to maybe possibly include all hospitality. I understand that if this gets too big, it just delays it and costs more money. But the way I'm reading this, it seems to be very specific to a hotel. It even is very specific as to the hotel has been identified. I have some concerns regarding some possible potential necessity for certain amenities at a proposed property. I guess I'm concerned that this seems to be a little more specific than I thought that the direction that we were going.
Council Member Jones, it is a hotel specific study, as was indicated when at the last council meeting. It does pertain to this specific type of hotel that we're looking at, and as you can see in here, Core Distinction Group discusses who and the details of the feasibility study in the market. Also, as part of that hotel-specific feasibility study, when I talked to the potential companies, it was discussed to include, which was my understanding from the last council meeting, the additional pieces that there may be a gap in the community, such as entertainment options and that. So for a hotel feasibility study that is broad, if you wanted us to back up and look at that, then what we would need to do is to get a different estimate in the cost as to one that's generic, that it's not specific to this style of hotel, which this one targets. You know, they can go down to a smaller room size, like 30 rooms, 35, depending on the community and the feasibility. If council wants a broad one, then I would need to go back, get a different estimate on that, and come back.
Well, I thought there was some concerns about being very specific. And I guess I'll just speak for myself. I was concerned about that it sets a not necessarily a precedence, but it sets an open door for other entities to come in and ask for feasibility studies. I was willing to give the Economic Development Committee a little leeway because that's what they're there for. I think we could have done a little more as far as maybe something like a bed and breakfast or something like that too. So it can be used a little more for maybe to encourage some other businesses or entrepreneurs to maybe gain from this study. I did notice that there was nothing in this stating. Now, let me ask you this. I'm assuming this has not been signed, or has this already been signed and gone?
No, sir, it's not been signed. Okay. It needed to come to council for review.
Okay. I just didn't want to, if it's already done, I wasn't going to prolong this. But there was nothing in here, any type of a clause that we have any approval of what type of survey they were going to do as far as any questioning. I thought there were some concerns with that, but I just don't see that on here, that
If our committee has maybe some recommendations, that they will be allowed to make that recommendation and that they were open to that. But to me, it doesn't seem like that there is any reference to that or any availability to amend anything besides what they've already included in here as far as their amendment of punctuation and spelling and things like that. So
if I'm missing what you're saying, let me know. But there's a certain level that we have to rely on them as the experts on the feasibility study, mm-hmm. that certain questions that they need to ask so that they know. The additional questions that I reviewed with them, if you'd like him to be included in a clause in here, I certainly can go back to them and ask them to include that we would like to have, you know, specific questions included, you know, for community entertainment or gaps in the community for entertainment. I can ask that they include that in there. And then if you want that, the Economic Development Committee can vet those potential questions for the additional clause, then I'd be happy to work with the core group to discuss that and see. Did I get what you were saying?
For the most part. I mean, I think that's the best way to say it. I mean, I guess my concern is the Economic Development Committee going to have an opportunity to look at this survey to see if it's even something that maybe they relook at the questions they're going to ask and maybe can answer them themselves, whether or not we proceed. I'm concerned once we sign off on this and they become where they decided that this is not a market, that we are on the hook for half the money, and therefore we get nothing in return for that. I know there's a risk to do this, but if we're trying to prevent the precedence of other entities coming in and asking for this type of thing, I just would have liked it to be a little more broader, I guess, and not maybe be specific to a hotel per se, but I thought that was a concern at the last council meeting.
Well, and the facts of it are that a feasibility study, as much as we'd like it to be broad, they need to have a certain narrowing to a hotel or a restaurant or those kind of things. Similar in nature when we did the pool, we had to have a specific feasibility study that said the pool and this is the cost and that kind of thing. So one giant feasibility study for business in CUNA is probably a little tougher and expensive, but when it comes to the hotel, when I talked to them, I said, you know, the council is interested in knowing where some potential gaps that we have in the community for entertainment as a resource for the community and for travelers. And that is to be included, and I certainly ask that we have that clause added to the contract. I mean, we're paying them. They should do that. I did appreciate that there is a halfway mark, that if it turns out that this is not the community, that we're not out the entire amount, that there is they do work. They come out for that first 50%. They do come out on site. They do meet with local businesses, to probably CS Beef Packers, Lineman College. They get hands-on. They actually come out and talk to businesses, and they go through that whole process. If at that point they determine that it's not feasible, it's not going to happen for CUNA, then we don't pay the second half, as I think you referenced in there. But they'll revisit back in 12, 18, 24 months to see if potentially to finish out the study or to look at it again. But it is hotel specific. It is specific to hotels, and it's specific to a hotel that would accommodate our, you know, a smaller room number versus a big one that needs to have 70 rooms or 80 rooms or something along those lines.
Just to clarify for the record, though, what I'm hearing you say is that you did take, based on our last discussion, the request to broaden it as much as we can, understanding that there is a somewhat limited scope, so let's figure out what sorts of additional, like, more general questions we can ask within that scope, and that will be happening. Is that what I'm hearing you say?
That's correct.
Okay.
And if council has some specific questions, or Councilmember Boom Vanderhaar, if you have some specific suggestions, I think they're welcome, and I'll work with CORE and, you know, get those included for sure.
Do you know, I know that it was indicated last meeting that I believe you and Wendy have looked at another feasibility study from a different town. Has the Economic Development Committee or even Brianna have an opportunity to see what type of questions they have asked? Has anybody from that committee seen what a feasibility study for a hotel looks like? And I would think that our Economic Development Committee would have some sort of idea of what type of questions they're asking. They might be able to answer it themselves, whether or not they want to still go forward. Do you know if that's taken place or anything?
I just want to make sure I'm answering your question, and I'm not. So you're asking, did Wendy and I bring the sample feasibility study to the Economic Development Committee for them to view? No, we did not. What we did do, though, is we discussed at length what the proposition was with a hotel-specific study. We also discussed with them the demographics that we had assembled that are specific to CUNA. We also discussed with them the different information that came out in the feasibility study that we viewed. It was one from Colorado, and then we viewed one or two from Utah, and that the demographic information that we have put together was similar in nature to the questions. We did discuss that with the committee as well.
Do you know if nobody from the committee has talked to any type of representative from the hotel, have they?
Yes, there was a conference call the Wednesday after the last council meeting that was set up prior to that to discuss with the potential hotel. It's actually Bimark is their developer, to discuss, just to get more information, to understand further the whole process. How does it work? Because they had indicated there has been communication prior to them potentially coming here. They, the ones that explained about hotel feasibility study, they gave some suggestions of possible companies to do a hotel feasibility study. And then we had a conference call. Two of the members were present, as well as Wendy and myself and the mayor. It was a conference call.
Do you know if there was any discussion as to what the hotel chain would require to be profitable? I mean, I would assume that there's got to be some sort of reports coming out with this, and hopefully with this, as far as a breakdown and all that. But
yeah, they discussed that.
And the Economic Development Committee believes that CUNA has that to offer for what the hotel to remain profitable, for what they would require without any additional funding or amenities?
I'm not sure why didn't you say additional funding or amenities, but the conversation that occurred did talk about the potential for how many rooms have to be filled at what percentage, but that it was made clear that that information comes out in the feasibility study as to whether it's anticipated that those marks can be met. The city staff is not experts in a feasibility study for a hotel specific, nor is anybody that sits on the Economic Development Committee.
No, I agree with that, but I just think that the Economic Development Committee, I believe, makes up a lot of business people or business-minded people, that they could decipher if a hotel usually needs some sort of avenue to remain profitable, either a through fare, a destination, having maybe 20 meets a year or something, or something like along those lines. And I guess what I was referring to is the funding and stuff like that, is if they would, require that we have more events or something like that, if that's something that they would be asking the city to help facilitate, so that they would be profitable.
No. Okay. I mean, it's not the city's responsibility to recruit more events for one business, whether it be a restaurant or a clothing store or a grocery store or a hotel or anything like that. It's the responsibility of economic development is to increase and expand economic development, like the chamber is to promote business, their business members. I guess I can confidently say that it seems unreasonable to come back to council and say to you, so the hotel, the feasibility study's done, and here's what it says. And it says that in order for this hotel to come, that we have to commit to bringing 10 new events in every year for the next 6 years, and that they'd like you to sign a contract and agree to that. I don't think that we would ever make that commitment to somebody. I don't think that we would ever come to council and ask for that kind of commitment.
I appreciate that. And I guess, my concern is, though, is that if, it's in here that they're going to respond with the necessity for certain amenities at this proposed property. So I guess where I'm concerned is that they're going to come in and require not. And I was just using the Ben as an example, but, obviously I don't think we're there yet, but for us to build a convention center an event center or something, that's where,
I understand your question. I understand your question a little bit better. What that talks about, and as we talked about in that conference call, and I don't know if you've discussed that conference call with the other attendees that were there. I mean, certainly welcome. There was nothing confidential in it. But the matter is that they're looking at certain markers, such as, are they close to a grocery store? Are they close to a convenience store? Are they close to a restaurant? Are they close to easy access as far as, the highway, the street, that they don't have to drive through a complicated subdivision to get to the hotel? When they are, based on the conversation, the conference call we had with the hotel representative and the call that I had with CORE, that's what they're talking about is it near a development? Is it near, like McDonald's? Is it, close to amenities that are existing or that are planning to be there, that it's zoned or there's some plan in place or something like that, that it's commercial in nature? Did that answer?
I'll ask one more question and I'll move. Do you recall looking at the feasibility study for the other cities, if they already had a site picked out when they did the feasibility study?
No, it's part of the feasibility study is that they help identify some potential sites.
Okay. Thank you.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Further questions?
I have one for Richard. If you would go to page 4 or 5. Go down to the 7th bullet. I think the sentence is incomplete.
Meaning that within some number of business days after such revisions are requested?
Yes. Should we have an insertion there of how many days you would be comfortable to get a reply on that? Is it our obligation to insert the schedule of days there?
Not sure what came out in the original. Something got cut off on the end, but you're correct. There should be some days there. It looks like they have 10 requested minor changes. She'll issue the report within, and then 5 copies. So I will say staying consistent, we would insert 10 days into that section.
Since it's contractual, I would think we would want a certain amount of days inserted there for road protection.
Yes. Exactly the same.
Is there a reason why they're inserted there, or does it make any difference as to the other bullets in between 4 and 6 to have one removed?
I would say that we could strike one of those. This was prepared by Corps, so we can strike it and have it initialed and sent over for initialing by Corps.
It's not, I guess my question is, it's not addressing a different subject in between number 4 and 6, so number 5 is not addressed in number 6, do you think?
No.
Okay. Thank you.
Okay.
One last thing here. Is this report going to be available to council when it's done?
I'm sorry, Councilmember Jones, I didn't hear you.
Is this report going to be available to council when it's done?
Okay. Of course.
Okay. Further discussion? Further question?
Move we approve resolution number R26-2017.
Second.
Motion is made and seconded to approve resolution, what was it again?
26-2017.
R26-2017. Is there any further discussion? All those in favor say aye.
Aye. Aye.
All opposed? Motion carries. Thank you. One item I wanted to bring up for discussion, just kind of give you an update. There's been some talk about, through the legislature, removing the grocery sales tax. When that was first addressed, the Association of Idaho Cities went out and did a put together some numbers on that. The State Tax Commission estimated that to be about 15% of the total distribution rate that cities receive. In our case, that's just a little south of $130,000 out of our budget per year. Association of Idaho Cities went in and asked for them to amend that so that the state takes up that loss, and for some reason the state was willing to do that. So they increased our distribution share up to 13.2%, which makes up that 15%. However, I think on short notice, I don't know that the State Tax Commission can accurately say that that's 15%, but they might be close, I don't know. But the way it looks right now, it did come out from amendment. They did that really quickly within a day, so it tells me they're really interested in pressing forward with that grocery tax repeal. So don't know for sure where that's going, but I just thought I'd let you know that was a substantial impact on our city's budget, and apparently they are willing to make up for that. So almost sounds like the state's making too much money and they're willing to give it up. So that was kind of all I had to add to that. Is there anything else, anybody else?
I'm traveling for the next meeting. My plan was to call in, but I know my work day goes with the time change right up until the meeting starts, so there might be an issue with that, with okay. me calling in right on time. So I can get with Chris or whoever. Just I'll check the agenda and stuff and see if it's worth trying to call in. Or if I might be a little bit late or whatever.
Okay, very good. Meeting adjourned. Thank you.